Here's Walker, off balance three, up on rim, bouncy, no good. Ball is loose, and the shot goes up. Clock down to zero. It's over! West Virginia's done it! The West Virginia Mountaineers have come back from 19 points down in the final 11 minutes of play to knock off the Cowboys of Oklahoma State by a final score of 87-84. And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer wherever you may be.
Big win for West Virginia. Of course, Josh Eilert on the coaching staff there from our neck of the woods. We've had Josh on a few times, certainly, over the years. And West Virginia down 19 comes back to beat Oklahoma State 87-84. Big win for West Virginia. Great night to be a Mountaineer. Before we preview KU and K-State tonight, plus an NBA star sidelined by COVID-19. We'll update you on the Chiefs' injury situation, who they'll play next year, and the latest with Eric Bieniemy, who's going to be a, you would think, highly thought of head coaching candidate. He has a few interviews lined up, and we'll go through the jobs that are available for Eric Bieniemy and what job would you take. You can play along at home or in your car, wherever you are listening to the Sports Ticket here this morning. All right, Dusty, we got local locker room chats. We start them up again here in 2021.
Yeah, tonight we'll talk with the head coaches of the wrestling teams of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center here. That'll be around 5:10 to 5:15, so stay tuned for that on KD Country 94 and also online at kdcountry94.com. And then coming up on Wednesday and Thursday, tomorrow and Thursday night, we'll talk with the basketball coaches in our areas, same time, so on KD Country 94 and kdcountry94.com. And then Friday night, we have high school hoops scheduled to be on the radio with Hoisington at Beloit on KD Country 94 and also online video at ncksports.com. And then Pike Valley at Lakeside and Northern Plains League action scheduled to be on Friday on Z96 Point Through the Lake and also your Z96 Point Through the Lake app and kdcountry94.com. So looking forward to getting things started back with the winter sports season. Practices got back underway yesterday for the teams that were able to do so, and we'll get them back rolling this week.
Lakeside, that would be their first games of the year on Friday.
Crossing fingers. I told the co-ADs over there, I said, I'm coming. I said, fingers crossed.
Yeah, right. That's the plan.
So Drew's like, I've been crossing my fingers since December 15th.
Yeah, maybe even sooner than that, no doubt. All right, Big 12 basketball tonight. Man, I might just have to call in, you know, to where I can't come in early in the morning if I want to stay up and watch KU tonight. KU at TCU at 9 o'clock. 8:30, it's like a West Coast start. 8:30 pregame tonight on Z96.3 Lake. And once again, we're at low power on Z96.3. But if you're within, I think it's a 60 or 75-mile radius of our station, which most people listening would be, you can listen via the app because we are allowed to stream KU. We're not allowed to stream the Chiefs broadcast because the NFL is that type of way. But anyway, they're very protective of their billion-dollar industry, to say the least. So 8:30 pregame tonight on Z96.3 Lake and the free KZDY Z96.3 Lake app on your smartphones or mobile devices. KU at TCU tonight. KU fell in the rankings to number 6, I think I saw.
Yeah.
Which kind of surprised me. Only 3-6 after getting beat by 25 at home. Texas shot up to number 4. Baylor's 2. Gonzaga's 1. That makes sense. Villanova paused their program. Going to postpone 3 games coming up or 4 games. So we're going to see Price that here and there throughout. You know, Duke is still trying to get going again, and Coach K doesn't even know he's going to coach the next couple games because of contact tracing and this and that. It's just, it is, you're just going to have to piecemeal this thing together. So KU's at TCU tonight, and Bill Self breaks down TCU, who is playing some good ball right now.
They got a good team. You know, Earmard is leading the league in scoring. They got a freshman that's one of the most elite players, young kids in our league. And then, of course, you know, Samuels, all he does is get 10, 10, and 4, and he's capable of doing much more than that. So they've got nice pieces. They can stretch it. They shoot the three. They defend the three. And obviously, you know, as we witnessed on Saturday, we didn't do a very good job of defending the three at all. So they definitely pose some challenges.
TCU's 9-2. They have won 5 in a row. They're 2-1 in the Big 12. KU's 2-1 in the Big 12. They're also 8-2. Their 8-game winning streak snapped abruptly by Texas the other day. I saw somebody at KU talking about, well, we haven't played since December 22nd. You know that Texas hadn't played since December 20th. So the excuse applies to you, but not to Texas, who beat you by 25.
In your own gym.
In your own gym. It's just amazing to me how people can make excuses for their team without even taking the time to find out. When was the last time Texas played?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's why Texas was sharper. They had 2 extra days of rest.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? listen, KU's going to struggle if they don't hit threes. It's just as simple as that. And when they hit threes, they are going to be very good. And we've seen that in the last two games. Against West Virginia, lights out, although I thought West Virginia's defense was really poor. KU had wide open three after three, and they made them. You know, they had good looks against Texas. They didn't make them. And they have no interior presence, as we established yesterday. David McCormick has to be better. David McCormick has to be better. David McCormick has to be better in order for Kansas to have any chance of winning the Big 12. He has to be better if Kansas is going to make a run in the NCAA tournament, which, by the way, is going to be in Indiana, and most of it in Indianapolis. So if you want to get to the Final Four, it's in Indianapolis. Kansas will not make the Final Four without McCormick doing something, because your only other option is Mitch Lightfoot. And Mitch Lightfoot is an energy player. He can block a few shots. He's not that physical. He's not an offensive threat. So you're not going to be able to live on five guards all year long. It might work for you for a game or two. It might work for you for a spurt or two. It might work for you for a half. It might work for you for a couple games. It's not going to get you, at least I don't believe, I don't think you can win four games and get to the Final Four with a five-guard lineup and get nothing out of David McCormick. So McCormick's got to be better, and I don't want to put it all on McCormick because, listen, when you have open threes, you need to knock them down. Kansas had open threes. Christian Brown looked great against West Virginia, hit six threes. Texas couldn't buy a bucket, and he had some open looks, wide open looks. Kansas was 3 of 23 from three against Texas. They were 16 of 29 against West Virginia. I'm going to tell you right now, KU's not that great of a three-point shooting team to make 16 out of 29, and they're not that horrible a three-point shooting team to go 3 of 23. They're somewhere in between. But that's the beauty of three-point shooting in college basketball. One night you're on, the next night you're off. And then some night you're going to be 8 of 23, which is probably right in the middle. So tonight is, with KU, normally when they lose and they get embarrassed or they lose a game they shouldn't lose, and if they lose a game at home, they almost always win the next game. Uh-huh. They hardly ever let that roll into a second or even a third loss. It is very, very rare that it happens. They're going on the road at TCU. Fans are not an issue, won't be in hostile environment. TCU is a good, solid team. I don't think they're as good as Kansas, but they only have to be as good or better in Kansas tonight in order to win. And I think every game in the Big 12 for Kansas could be a struggle if they're not making the outside shot. One of the things, too, tonight, Bryce Thompson's out with a back injury. Marcus Garrett may not play. He did not practice on Sunday. Marcus Garrett took a major shot to the face from a Texas player, inadvertent elbow. And if Marcus Garrett doesn't play, you don't have any bench hardly at all. And DeJuan Harris is going to have to play. DeJuan Harris is going to have to play maybe 40 minutes, is what Bill Self said. And he's a kid that I really like as a bench player. I like him coming off the bench with energy. He plays really good defense. He'll take charges. He doesn't make too many mistakes passing the ball. He's a good ball handler. He's not a good shooter. So if you go to TCU and Garrett can't play, and that hurts your defense, obviously, and it hurts your depth, and then Thompson can't play, that hurts your depth, and Garrett's not a great outside shooter to begin with, but better than Harris, who's going to score? If McCormick isn't going to step up, and Harris is not a kid that's going to go out and get you 20, trust me, then you've got Jalen Wilson, Abaji, and Brown. Those three have to elevate their games. And Abaji and Brown did not elevate their games against Texas.
No.
And Wilson did as much as he could and had to force some stuff. Kansas, one of the biggest things, and I know it's not fair to compare last year's team to this year's team, because first of all, they had Udoka and they had Devon Dotson. And those are NBA players. And KU does have a few NBA players on the roster. I think Abaji's an NBA player. I think Garrett could be an NBA player in a role situation. And they might have others down the line. Rice Thompson might be an NBA player. I'm not sure. But they don't have a guy that can get all the way to the rim and score you an easy bucket. They don't. Bill Self talked about it yesterday. I mean, you know, I don't know how many times I watch KU this year. I see Marcus Garrett drive and get to the hoop, and he looks in slow motion. And that's unfair to Marcus Garrett. You know why I think he's in slow motion? Because I saw Devon Dotson last year just be a blur and somehow get to the rim, who's shorter and smaller but much quicker with the ball in his hands than Marcus Garrett. Devon Dotson was maybe the quickest guard with the ball in his hands last year in all of college basketball. So that's unfair to Marcus Garrett. It's also unfair to David McCormick to expect him to be a shot blocker when Udoka was a shot blocker his last year when he thinned down and put some muscle on and was in better shape, because Udoka wasn't known as a shot blocker his first couple of years. But McCormick doesn't have the power to just, you know, back guys down, turn and dunk. And the other thing, too, that Bill Self talked about yesterday is they don't get easy baskets. Kansas doesn't get easy baskets. In order for Kansas to get easy baskets, it has to come in transition, which means your defense has got to get deflections. Your defense has got to make plays. And sometimes you get that in transition off a block shot. Well, they're not getting block shots, okay? They're not getting a lot of steals. So they got to score in a half-court setting. And in transition, they got to take full advantage when they have a break opportunity. But they don't have guys that I would say are great finishing at the rim. I think Jalen Wilson can. After that, tell me who on KU is a really good finisher at the rack. Garrett, yeah. Maybe. Probably Garrett. Garrett and Wilson. But Garrett, when he has to drive 5-on-5, he usually gets a shot rejected, has to alter it, and doesn't usually score. Whereas last year, they were able to spread the floor a little bit. You had Udoka, who could maybe seal a guy. And you had Dodson, who had the respect. And then Garrett would be able to have a little room maneuver, and he could navigate his way, make a few moves, drop step, get a layup. He doesn't have that luxury this year.
Yeah.
So this team is much different. It's not nearly as talented as last year's team. Can this team make a run and get to the Final Four? Yes. But in order to get to the Final Four, to me, they need two things. One, they're going to have to be better at shooting threes because they're going to rely on it a lot. And two, they're going to have David McCormick be better. Because if that's the best we're going to see David McCormick this year, then Kansas is not going very far. And I don't want to put it all on one guy, but he's the only post presence they have.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, it's,
they got nobody else inside.
It is difficult to do that, but when that's all you have, that's what it is. I mean, things are what they are in this situation.
You're not going to get new recruits coming
in.
No.
You have who you've got, and Mitch Lightfoot's not the answer of what you're expecting from a guy like David McCormick, right? Yeah, like Mitch Lightfoot can do a few things for you, but he's not a guy that's going to take over the game. So it has to be McCormick.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
And he's capable of it. I mean, we see flashes of it at times. He's a good rebounder, but he's a liability on screen and rolls on the perimeter, which Udoka at times could be that too.
Yeah.
But he can make up with it with his length. McCormick doesn't. And then the biggest frustration I have with McCormick is you work so hard to get position, and then you fade away and don't turn strong to the rim and score.
Mm-hmm.
He should be scoring. I remember him as a freshman. I saw flashes like, this kid's going to be really, really good. And now you look at him and you're like, how was he a McDonald's All-American? And maybe it's the pressure. You know, there's a lot of pressure on him. He's been in a role situation, role player, support role. And it is different. You know, we talked about that with K-State last year. Remember Cartier Jada? Oh, well, you know, we're better with Stokes on the bench and Jada. I remember K-State fans telling him out left and right. Jada's a better player than Stokes. Jada needs more minutes. K-State's the injury to Stokes, blessing in disguise. And then wait till Jada's our point guard. Well, then Jada became the point guard, and how'd that work out? Jada was okay in a supporting role.
Yeah.
But he wasn't ready to be the man leading the team at the point guard position. You know, I think Marcus Garrett can handle the point guard position for Kansas. He's done a pretty good job so far. But he's not even close to being the floor general that Devon Dotson is.
Yeah.
Because, one, he doesn't shoot as well from the perimeter. He's not as quick to get into the lane. He's more of a defensive player, but he can score his 10, 15 a game sometimes. But Garrett's not going to go nuts and score 30 very often, if at all. So you suddenly have a guy like David McCormick, or you had a guy like, for K-State, Cartier Jada. Guys that were role players that did okay, and you saw flashes, you're like, oh, man, imagine what they do when they get more minutes. And now here we are. And you're disappointed.
Yeah.
Because either the expectations are too high, or these guys just aren't ready for their roles, can't handle it mentally, can't handle the pressure, can't handle it physically. I don't know for sure what it is. And it's up to Bill Self. Bill Self's, you know, a Hall of Fame coach. These coaches have to get the best out of these players. And right now, Bill Self is not getting the best out of David McCormick. Now, having said all of that, McCormick could figure it out. And if McCormick figures it out, whether it's now or, you know, late February, then all of a sudden Kansas is a different team.
Absolutely.
So there's no reason to give up on Kansas if you're a Jayhawk fan. I know it's embarrassing. You lost by 25 at home. It was just one loss. What's the difference between losing Oklahoma State and Marcus Smart doing backflips at midcourt in a close game and losing to Texas by 25? To me, there's no difference. I'll tell you why. Because it's one loss.
Yeah.
But people freak out. Oh, we lost by 25. Get over it. You had a bad day. Listen, I've said it before. I'd rather lose by 25 than lose on a last second shot. If I have a really good team. Because I just know it was a bad night.
Yeah.
It was just a bad night. It happens. We had a bad night, didn't shoot the ball well, and then come back and we'll bounce back. And we just basically don't worry too much about the film. Yeah, we look at some of it, whatever. It's even harder to go back and look at the film when you lost on a one-possession game. See Texas Tech giving up an inbounds play to Kansas that won in Lubbock. See Oklahoma State last night, who lost to West Virginia by 3 after being up by 19. Yo, been better. Oklahoma State lost by 19 last night. And I know people may say, well, that's stupid. How can you say that? Because that means they weren't competitive, lost by 19. No, what I'm saying is you have a bad night, you write it off. You can come back and get the next one. You don't spend a lot of time worrying about it unless you have a string of bad performances. KU never has a string of bad performances. That's just, they don't. Kansas doesn't do that. Duke doesn't do that. I used to say Kentucky, but now Kentucky's done that.
Rough start.
North Carolina really didn't until last year. So your Gonzagas don't do that right now. And Baylor really honestly doesn't do that now the last few years. Baylor's has moved into the upper echelon in college basketball and in the Big 12 as well. So is Kansas as good as last year? No. Is Kansas a threat to win at all this year? I don't think so. As of now, I can reserve judgment to change my mind. Are they a threat to win the Big 12? I'd say they're a threat, but I don't think they're going to. And I stand by that comment that I made before the season began. Are they not as talented? True. But can they still make a run? Yeah, absolutely sure. They can. And if you're a KU or K-State fan, which roster would you rather have right now? People would say, I'll take the KU roster. I'll even take the coach. You know, K-State fans would say that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And KU, fans get riled up because they lost by 25 at home to Texas. It's just one loss. And you turn around and lose to TCU tonight, and then you lose your next game, and now all of a sudden you're 2-3 in the Big 12. Now maybe for KU fans it's time to panic a little bit. And you can start using the excuse of the NCAA investigation that's hampered you from getting these top flight players to Kansas, which I do think there's an impact there. I think there is. But if KU goes out and looks good tonight and beats TCU, and then they turn around and win their next game, which I forgot who they play after that, you're 4-1 in the Big 12, and you're sitting there, and 4-1 in the Big 12 might be tied for first. So let's not overreact to one loss, is I guess what I'm trying to say. But this is not a team that wows you with athleticism. They don't get lobs. They don't get easy baskets. They have to really work and grind. This Kansas team's going to have to be, honestly, this Kansas team's going to have to be a little bit like the team that went to the national championship game back in 2012 in New Orleans. They're going to have to grind it out. They're going to have to win games. They're going to have to improve defensively. And that's what Bill Self was really disappointed with against Texas the other day. He didn't like the defense. Because your defense can always be there for you. Your offense can disappear, but your defense, listen, you struggle offensively, but you shut down the other team, you still got a chance. That's what the team with Tayshaun Taylor and Thomas Robinson did in 2012. They won games in the NCAA tournament scoring 60 points, and no more than 60 points. They would find a way to win games because their defense always kept them in it. And this team is going to have to be that type of team. They're going to have to be a grinding team. Yeah, they're going to have some nights where they shoot the ball well, but they're going to have to be better defensively. But here's the problem and why I don't think they're going to get to that level. They don't have Jeff Withey.
No.
They don't have Thomas Robinson. Those two guys they both could score, although Withey wasn't a great scorer, but he could. Withey was a great rim protector. That improves your defense automatically.
Uh-huh.
Robinson can step out and hit the 15-footer. And he had great low post moves, which opened up outside shooting, which KU wasn't a great outside and shooting team in 2012. And they had a dynamic point guard who could get to the bucket in Dijon Taylor, and Kansas doesn't have that this year. So you may say, okay, Wade, that's really not a good comparison. Well, the only comparison I'm making is that team had to grind it out to win the Big 12 and make a run in the tournament. This team, I think, has to do the same type of thing. I just don't know how they're going to do it with the personnel they have.
Yeah. It is interesting when you, because I was looking at their schedule to see who they play next. It's Oklahoma, by the way, on Saturday.
At home.
Yeah. But it's interesting looking at their schedule because you talk about grinding it out, right? So they scored 90 and 94 points in their first two games. You're like, this team's got a good offense. And then all of a sudden, 65, 89, 65.
Well, 89, so, I don't count because that's going, Washburn.
Yeah. They're so just going back and forth, is what I'm saying. Right. It's like you have one game where they're on, right? Where they're, it's what we're seeing right now.
Well, KU, which is what you talk about with 3-point shooting.
Yeah. It's 79 to 59 in the last two games, right? So it's like they're scoring, but they're not scoring sometimes. And like you said, they're going to have to grind out wins at times this year.
Right.
They're not just going to be able to go in there and just score every time and just be able to, you know, run teams out of the gym. It's just not going to happen.
Well, let's look at the three Big 12 games so far. They won at Texas Tech 58-57. They had to grind that one out.
Yeah.
And they won. West Virginia, they got hot, and they held West Virginia 65. So the defense wasn't bad, and they shot the ball lights out from three. Texas couldn't buy a bucket. Defense was bad. Lost by 25. I mean, I think you're going to see that yin and the yang for KU more this year than we've seen in quite some time with the Jayhawks, where they're going to look great some nights, and other nights they're going to look like they did the other day against Texas.
Yeah.
And it's up to Bill Self. That's why he's paid the big bucks to get this team to be more consistent. And who would bet against Bill Self? I don't know how many times over the years with Bill Self where he's had teams suddenly struggle and lose a game or two, and people start talking about how they're not that great, they're overrated. And next thing you know, he's holding up the Big 12 championship trophy at the end of the year. So maybe it's unfair for me to say that, well, it's not unfair. I'm just my opinion. I don't think Kansas will win the Big 12 this year. And I feel, and this is the first time I've said Kansas will not win the Big 12 in 15 years on this show. Because every year I say, until Kansas loses, I'm picking Kansas. All right? I'm picking Kansas. Well, 2 years ago, they didn't win the Big 12. Last year, they did. They got back at the top of the heap. I just don't see this team being. And I think the Big 12 as a whole is even better than it has been, and maybe the best it's ever been. I really think Texas Tech's a good team. I know they're 1-2 in the Big 12. Oklahoma State is a dangerous team. I mean, Oklahoma State, I mean, for crying out loud, they've been in every game in the Big 12. I mean, Oklahoma State right now is 1-2 in the Big 12. They lost to TCU by 1 point. They lost to Texas by 3. They won at Texas Tech, and last night they lost by 3 to West Virginia. So their losses, they are 1-3 in the Big 12, and their three losses are a combined 7 points.
Yeah.
And they have maybe the best player in the country in Cade Cunningham. You think Kansas is just going to roll into Stillwater and win that game, or even host Oklahoma State and win that game? And especially if you don't have 16,300 people, that takes away from KU's home court advantage. Like, I don't think KU would have beat Texas with the 16,300 people the other day. But there's going to be, I think, a game where you're going to go, wow, KU lost a close one at home. Had they had the crowd, that might have been the difference.
I think we've already seen that at other places this year, right?
I think
we've seen
that with Duke. But we haven't seen it at KU yet.
Yeah, I think we've seen it with Duke for sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's a home court advantage that you just don't have anymore.
And it's a huge advantage you had over all your teams in your conference, because at the end of the year when Kansas won the Big 12, what are you usually saying? Well, they're going to play 18 conference games. Well, they're going to be at minimum 8-1 at home.
Yeah.
So all you got to do is go out and go 4-5, and you five and four, and you're 13-5 in the Big 12. You have that automatic advantage because of home court. And yes, people can say you get a few calls at home, and usually most good teams do. But when you take away part of that advantage in conjunction with a team that's maybe not as athletic and as good, suddenly that you see where I go with not winning the Big 12.
Yeah. I heard somebody saying the other night too that the not having the crowd affects the officials more than it affects
the
players, because the officials now don't feel the need to please the crowd, right?
True.
To please everybody there, like you
and they're going to hear the opposing coach even more with a quieter, not so many fans in the building.
Yeah, and so I was like, that's actually a fairly valid point, because you really to make everybody happy up there that's yelling at you, and it doesn't affect you as much because you're not hearing all that coming in at you from the home crowd.
As a ref, you shouldn't be hearing it.
You shouldn't.
Two, you shouldn't be trying to adhere and please the crowd ever.
Yeah.
But you know human nature, at some point when you know you've messed up a call.
Yeah.
You probably want to make
it happen.
Oh, sure it does.
I'm not saying that there's some conspiracy and a real big disparity of calls, but what I'm saying is it does happen.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's go. And we haven't spent a lot of time talking Big 12 basketball. We're going to talk K-State here for a little bit. We're not going to spend as much time on K-State as KU. But this right now, and I know there's that bitter pill taste in our mouths in regards to what KU did in their last game. But let's look at the rest of their schedule. I know it's really early, but the rest of their schedule, they're at TCU tonight. Do you think they win tonight?
I think they'll turn it around and get it tonight.
I think they should, but if Garrett doesn't play, I don't think they do.
Yeah.
But I think Garrett will play. So I'll go with you, but I wouldn't be surprised if they lose tonight. So let's say they win. They're 3-1. Oklahoma at home?
I think they'll win that.
See, and that would be an automatic in the past.
Yeah.
But that's a think. So there's 4-1. At Oklahoma State, I'm going to say they lose. They're going to lose one of these.
They don't have a great history at Oklahoma State anymore.
They don't. 4-2. Although the crowd won't be a factor.
Yeah.
Iowa State at home, you should win. Iowa State's down 5-2. At Baylor right now, I'd say a loss.
Yeah.
5-3. At Oklahoma, I'll say they split with Oklahoma. They're 5-4. They beat TCU at home, 6-4. At Tennessee, not a conference game, not going to worry about it. K-State at home, I'll say a win, 7-4. At West Virginia, I'm calling loss, 7-5. Are you with me so far? Uh-huh. You agree? Oklahoma State at home. Oklahoma State at home is not a gimme. I guess you could go win. You want to go win?
Yeah.
8-5. At Iowa State, I guess win, 9-5. At K-State,
10-5.
10-5. Texas Tech at home, I think you lose. 10-6. At Texas, how can you pick them to win that game after what they did to you earlier in the year?
Yeah, at home.
10-7. Well, okay, let's say they play great and they get revenge. Okay, 11-6. Baylor at home, 11-7.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, based on what I'm seeing, this Kansas team could very legitimately be 11-7 in the Big 12.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Bill Self's so good that I'm gonna lean towards he'll find a way to be 12-6, maybe 13-5. I don't know if 13-5 is good enough.
Well, the way Baylor's playing.
Right.
It's.
But if Texas Tech gets better and Texas is legitimate as we think, and West Virginia, you know, pulled one out of the fire last night, Baylor's obviously going to have some chances to lose in this conference.
Yeah.
But are they going to lose five times? Kansas have to obviously split with them to have a chance.
Oh, 100%.
I don't know, man. I'm looking at this and I'm going, if Kansas could go 12-6 in the Big 12, that'd be pretty good.
With what we're seeing right now, right. For sure. Yeah.
Based on what we see right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. A month from now, we may change our tune, and McCormick's playing great, and Christian Brown's automatic from three, and, you know, Bryce Thompson's figured it out, averaging 15 a game in Big 12 play. I mean, it could easily change. But based on the eye test we've seen so far, games they've been high and shot well, games not high, but they're high in regards to making shots. They're on their high level. And then we've seen them at their lowest level, which was against Texas the other day. And Texas, by the way, is a really, really good team.
Yeah.
I am having a hard time looking at the schedule based on what I've seen. Basically, what I've done is backed up the statement that Kansas won't win the Big 12 based on their schedule and based on how they play.
Yeah, it's hard to see anything better than 13-5, that's for sure.
And
just looking at it and seeing, you know, maybe they win one of the ones we said they lose, but then they lay an egg somewhere else, right? Because they're just not, they don't have what they've had in the past from the talent aspect and what they need to succeed.
It is a different Kansas team.
Yeah, it is.
Doesn't mean they can't be successful. It just might not be the level of success that KU fans are accustomed to. And I think KU fans are going to have to get used to that. And they obviously weren't used to it after seeing them lose by 25. You should have seen the comments.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, this is how spoiled KU fans are. Like, you know, Chiefs fans whine about not winning by enough and you're 14-1.
Yeah.
It's like, do you listen to yourself talk or write? Do you read the stuff you post? It's like, do you know, just a few years ago, we were 11-5 and couldn't win a playoff game. So we're 14-1 and you're whining, you're not enjoying the 14 wins, you're whining about how the games are too close. Who cares? What if the Chiefs blew out five of those teams but lost to the other two? Then they're 12-3 and they're not going to be the number one seed possibly.
Yeah.
And then they'd whine about not being a number one seed. Every fan base has these types of fans. Same way with KU. Freaking out about a 25-point loss. I could argue you're lucky to be where you are. You should have lost to Creighton. Well, let's be honest. Let's look at Kansas's schedule. They should have lost to North Dakota State. They should have lost to Creighton. They could easily lost to Kentucky. I mean, Kansas is one of, well, Texas Tech, they could easily. Kansas could easily right now, this sounds crazy, 4-6. They're Kansas is that close to being 4-6. Were KU fans whining about close wins? Oh, maybe a few. But then they freak out when they lose by 25. I'll take four close wins and get blown out every fifth game. I'll have a good record as a coach. I'll take four close wins, get blown out by 25 at home. Four close wins, get blown out by 25. Four close wins. You see how this works? I win 80% of my games. I think that's pretty good. At Kansas, they're 8-2. They've won 80% of their games, ironically.
Yes.
And you know how that goes.
It is.
It's not good enough because you lost to Texas by 25. Well, the embarrassing thing is we lost by 25. So you'd feel a lot better if they lost by 7?
Yeah, and it's...
A loss counts as 1, not 3.
And if you... It's just... the way it is when you're winning, right? And,
sure.
And so if you're like the Royals, right, because I'll use them as an example, they had a lot of fans that jumped on the bandwagon,
Which is okay.
So they were excited that they won. But then that next year in 2016, when they kind of fall a little bit, they don't play as well maybe throughout the whole season, then those same fans are the ones that are, like, complaining about what's wrong with the team, right?
Yeah.
And then, but then in 2017, those fans are nowhere to be
seen.
They're gone. Not a part of this anymore.
Nope.
And by now, they're well long gone.
Long gone.
People don't even care about Royals baseball anymore that did in 2014 and 15.
Exactly.
And so, but that's the way it is. I mean, it's that way with the Chiefs. You know, you can see the fans that have been here long enough that understand where the Chiefs have been, what they've been through, and what they've gone through.
Right.
So, yeah, for me, when I'm watching the game, I don't really enjoy it being a one-possession win. But when the game's over, as Le'Veon Bell said, we play a game of letters, not numbers,
right?
That means wins and losses. So they're 14-1 after the game was over against Atlanta. Doesn't matter how they got there. They've lost one game. They're 14-2 now because it didn't matter.
Right.
So, but then there's still those fans that are like, why didn't we play better against the Chargers, that don't even understand what's going on. They're just those fans that have jumped on, right? Because the Chiefs are winning, and then they lose 38-21 to the Chargers, and a team that's 7-9, and they're like, what's going on? Well, they nobody played
the
today.
Right.
And you don't follow the Chiefs,
and we can tell.
You're
not a fan, really.
And so you get it. It's KU all the time. But KU's never had that. My point is KU's never had that drop-off.
No.
Like complete drop-off.
No.
To where it's just there all the time. The fans are there. Those, no matter what kind of fans they are, some of them are going to be, you know, logical like you are.
Right.
Some of them are going to be those fans that have just been KU basketball fans. They don't watch any other basketball. They don't pay attention to anything else other than KU basketball, any sports.
Right.
And so they get into this like they know what's going on,
and they
can't control it. You know, it's like, oh, we're only winning. We shouldn't have lost this game by 25. What do we do? The sky is falling. And
there's two ways to look at that. There's two ways to look at that. As KU fans, and this applies to any fan base, but especially with teams that are really, really good almost all the time, two ways that fans look at it. They only watch their team. That's a very good point you bring up. Usually they only watch their team for the most part.
Yeah.
So all they know is the team that they follow, which is KU, and the team they play that particular day. That's all they know. So they go in the tournament. Like, I love KU fans keep telling me that KU would have won the national title last year. Did you watch other teams? Because I'm going to tell you something. Gonzaga was good. Dayton was good. I mean, Kansas beat Dayton and Maui, I know. Kansas was not an automatic lock. Hey, listen, that team last year, Kansas, was nowhere close to the Kansas team of 1997 that lost to Arizona in the Sweet 16. That Kansas team was 34-1 and lost in double overtime in Columbia, Missouri to their biggest rival as their only loss. That was the team that would have been automatic.
Yeah.
And so I just love how people have these, you know, the colored glasses on and say, well, Kansas was robbed of a national title. You would have to win six games.
Yeah.
You would have to win six games. And Kansas won a lot of games, and Kansas won a lot of close games last year. But they weren't dominant. Were they playing the best ball at the end than anybody in the country? Possibly. But the people that kept saying that last year were ones that only watched KU. They didn't understand how good other teams were because they didn't watch other teams play. And on the flip side, there are people I've heard this year. Well, Kansas, I mean, there's no way Kansas should be ranked third. They're not that good. Have you looked at the rest of college basketball? Because after Gonzaga and Baylor, I can't tell you who is the third best team.
Yeah.
So when you don't watch other basketball, you have no idea, and you look at KU and go, well, we can't be third because we've won a whole bunch of close games. We can't be third. And you know what? I don't think Kansas is the third best team in the country, and I thought that before the Texas game. But who else is?
Yeah.
I've always argued that. Like, if you want to put down Kansas, my oldest son and I have had this argument. He's 14. He goes, Kansas, the last 3 years, he tells me Kansas isn't that good. Kansas isn't that good. I said, great. Tell me who's better. Kansas isn't the fifth best team in the country. I go, good. Tell me five teams that are better. Because you have to come up with five, not four.
Yeah.
You got to come up with five. You give me five teams that you know are better than Kansas. I'll listen to your argument. He comes up with two or three. I said, you need a couple more.
Yeah.
And see, that's what happens. You automatically just vaguely, that's what fans do. And it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It causes a conversation on a sports show like today. Where, as Kansas fan, you go, well, we're great, and we would have won the national title, but you didn't know what the rest of the field was doing around you because you didn't watch any other college basketball. And then there's KU fans that do watch other college basketball, and they watch KU, and they watch a few games for other teams that might have played their best game of the year, and then they watch KU every week, and they go, well, KU barely wins, and I saw this team. God, man, gee, Tennessee looks unbelievable. They blew out Missouri. Then they turn around and lost to Alabama. I mean,
yeah.
Iowa's invincible. They lose to Minnesota. I mean, Kansas looks, you know, other people on the outside, Kansas, man, you know, they just find a way to win. Oh, my God, what's wrong with Kansas? Lost by 25 to Texas without watching the game. Well, Duke's really falling off. They don't even play right now. And North Carolina, they're not as – Texas, they're overrated. Well, North Carolina's not that great. Texas beat them. That's the only marquee win. I was guilty of that. And then they go in and punk Kansas. All of a sudden, Texas is awesome.
Yeah.
Texas turns around. Who does Texas play next? Let me pull up the schedule. Texas plays Iowa State tonight. What are you going to say about Texas if they lose to Iowa State at home tonight? So my point being is, if you want to say Kansas isn't worthy of being a third-ranked team or the sixth-ranked team right now, I'm cool with that. Rankings really don't matter a lot anyway to me because you're going to play it out at the end unless COVID messes it up again. You're going to play it out. We have a full playoff. Unlike college football, here's a concept. We play it out in basketball. We allow everybody in for the most part. All the conferences and affiliations are in. So there's 68 teams that fight it out in March. So we're going to, you know, forget the rankings. We're going to find out who's the best teams at that time of the year. And that doesn't mean those are the best teams over the course of the whole year. Lord knows Kansas fans should know that from all the years they've lost in the Sweet 16 in 97, lost to the Rhode Islands and the UTEPs of the world and in Northern Iowas, right? Were those teams better than Kansas? No. That particular day, they were. It's not a best 4 out of 7. This Kansas team could go to the tournament. I've always said Kansas seems to be better in the tournament when they're not thought of as highly. When Kansas is a 2 or a 3 or a 4 seed, I think Kansas is more dangerous than they are as a 1 seed because all the pressure in the world is when they're a 1. This could be the Kansas team, and I talked about it back in 2012. I remember on this very show. I said, this Kansas team, don't be surprised. You know, that was a team I think lost 3 in a row at one point during the Big 12. I said, don't be surprised if Kansas makes a run in the tournament. And people told me I was crazy. And I said, listen, there's plenty of time to put it together. It's all about how you finish, how you play at the end, right? That's what it's about. That's how you get judged. You can win all the Big 12 conference championships you want, but ultimately you usually get judged on, did you get to Final Fours and win national championships? That's just how it is, and that's how it should be. At the Blue Blood programs, that's how it should be. Kansas, that's awesome. You won 14 in a row conference titles? That's unbelievably awesome and great. I don't know what it says about your conference. You can argue that point another day. But the other thing that you can sit here and say is you won 14 conference championships and you only have one national title to show for it. That's not a good ratio. You probably should win more than one, right, out of those 14 years. And so, but it's a crapshoot because it's the NCAA tournament. You know, Kansas won all these close games this year. They get in the NCAA tournament, they could win a whole bunch of close games like 2012 and make it the national championship game. Because that team that made it to the national championship game in 2012 and lost to Kentucky in the final wasn't nearly as good as other Kansas teams that didn't get out of the Sweet 16. But they found a way to win. They did a little thing here. You know, good defense, got a steal, got a block, got a stop, made a big bucket on an out-of-bounds play. And the difference between Kansas and Texas Tech and Lubbock, you know, Texas Tech is ranked, what, 18th, and Kansas ranked 6th. Do you think Texas Tech is 12 teams worser than KU? No. Texas Tech should have beat KU in Lubbock. Didn't defend an out-of-bounds play because of one fundamental flaw, and that is you didn't cut off the lane to the bucket on underneath the basket on inbounds play, which is fundamentals 101. One little mistake cost Texas Tech that game. And that is the difference between, honestly, 8-2 that Kansas is and 6-4. That's the difference between winning your Sweet 16 game and losing in the first round. Seriously, it's that fine of a line. And so if you sit here and go, well, Kansas, they're just not as good this year, and there's no way we should be ranked 6th. You know, honestly, if you know your team ain't going to win the Big 12 or you've given up already on Kansas winning the Big 12 as a KU fan, then you should completely focus on March. You shouldn't worry about anything happening right now because you know Kansas will be in the tournament. So you should be worrying more about who we're going to play in March. Because it's what it comes down to. It comes down to matchups. And so can Kansas make a run in the tournament? Oh, absolutely. A lot of teams can, and let's be honest. I'll go back to my premise. Gonzaga's number one, Baylor's number two. I've watched both play, and they're, to me, clearly better than everybody else. I think Iowa's dangerous. I think Tennessee's dangerous. I don't think Kansas is dangerous when I watch Kansas, so I think those teams might be better than Kansas. But here's the thing. Kansas has a coach that I'll take over the coaches that are the head coaches of those teams. So when it comes down to the final minute and it's up to Kansas, if it comes down to strategy, inbounds plays, so forth and so on, coaching can make a huge difference. And that's a big advantage Kansas has. Bill Self has won games where he has had, believe it or not, the lesser talented teams. It's happened.
Yeah.
Okay? I know that's hard to believe for people who go, all he's got is McDonald All-Americans. And he doesn't have as talented a team this year. But that 2012 team wasn't super talented. It was good, but it was not unbelievably great. And nothing would surprise me what Bill Self does. And I wouldn't be surprised Kansas goes in as a number 4 or 3 seed in the NCAA tournament, and they make it to the Elite Eight. I wouldn't be surprised. But today, where they are now, I don't see that happening. But that doesn't mean it can't happen. But for the fan bases, when you say Kansas, oh, all these close losses, close wins, they're overrated. Or Kansas would have won the title last year. You're stuck on your team. It's the same thing with K-State in different ways. K-State looks at their basketball team and go, well, we just suck. And you enjoy KU losing by 25 to Texas more than if you would have beaten TCU Saturday.
Yeah.
In fact, there's some K-State fans wouldn't have known their team won against TCU or didn't even know they lost to TCU, enjoying a loss by Kansas more than a win by their own team. There are fans for every fan base that have that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that's really the ultimate respect to KU. Same thing happens with KU football with K-State football. KU football, all right, K-State lost, ha-ha, to Arkansas State. Well, you lost to Coastal Carolina. Oh, I didn't even know we were playing. Who cares? K-State lost. Woo!
Yeah,
because that's what you're caught up in. You know, the Chiefs, let's get back to them for a moment. You're 14-1. You win all these close games. You know what really good or great teams do?
They close.
They win close games. They win close games. What do you think is going to happen in the NCAA tournament? There's going to be a lot of close games. So Kansas's experiment winning close games early in the year, their experience actually could pay off come tournament time. Teams that don't get pressed as much and don't have these close games sometimes aren't ready for those moments. And so, you know, the Chiefs and the Chargers, do you think there's a major talent discrepancy between the Chiefs and the Chargers?
I wouldn't say major.
I wouldn't. I think it's minor.
Yeah.
I would say the Chargers defense is better than the Chiefs defense. I would say the Chiefs skill position players are better than the Chargers. I could argue the Chargers offensive line is better than the Chiefs when healthy. Justin Herbert's not as good as Mahomes, but he's still pretty doggone good. I can't say that there's any running back that the Chiefs have that is unbelievably better than anything the Chargers have. Eckler's a good running back. Helaire's a good running back. He's not a superstar. You know, we've got Hill. They got Keenan Allen. You know, he's a really good receiver. I mean, you compare the Chargers and the Chiefs, and you compare their rosters, and you're going to tell me the Chiefs are 7 games better? They're not. So what's the difference? A star player makes a few plays. A coach is a better coach than the other coach. Sometimes a little bit of luck doesn't hurt. And here's the difference. The Chargers this year lost 7 one-possession games in a row at one point. The Chiefs won 7 one-possession games in a row. You know why the Chiefs are 7 games better than the Chargers? Because they win all the close games, and the Chargers find a way to lose. Yeah. And that is the difference between the good and the great versus the average and the subpar. It's not as big of a gap as people like to think.
No.
Well, I'm KU. I'm a brand name. I'm surely better than TCU tonight. I'm going to tell you something. Kansas is not drastically better than TCU. They're not.
No.
And if you're a KU fan, you should not be surprised if you lose tonight. You also shouldn't be surprised if you go in there and win by 15. And that's the beauty of sports. But here's the thing I want to say. And fans, and I'm guilty of it as well. You got to really enjoy when your team's good. KU basketball fans don't understand what that's like in regards to being bad. They don't know what it's like. Let's be honest. KU basketball fans don't know what it's like to be bad since the early 80s. They don't.
Yeah.
They don't. In fact, a lot of Kansas fans don't even know what it's like to be an 8 seed in the NCAA tournament, which Roy Williams was an 8 seed one year. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Kansas fans are extremely, extremely spoiled. So they don't stop to appreciate winning 14 conference titles in a row. They don't appreciate making the Final Four usually because they want to win it all. They're never satisfied, right? With the Royals, and that's what was so refreshing about the Royals in 14 and 15 was we knew they'd been bad. We appreciated when they were good even more. And I quite honestly feel that Royals, diehard true Royals fans, and even the bandwagoners, enjoyed the Royals winning the World Series more and enjoyed the ride more than the Chiefs last year winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because the Chiefs are always pretty competitive, right? Andy Reid, every year we're in the playoffs. Alex Smith, we still win the division. We win 11, 12 games. We own the division. And then Mahomes comes in. Well, we win and we have about the same record, but you know, Mahomes wins the MVP and the Chiefs, you know, they lose because the Patriots win the coin flip. But we don't fully enjoy how great – it's the same thing with Mahomes. We don't fully enjoy how great he is because we've been spoiled because we see these plays all the time, and now we don't bat an eye. But somebody down in – a Cowboy fan who doesn't watch the Chiefs every day watch the highlight Mahomes, and they're like, oh, my God, that's amazing. And we Chiefs fans are like, yeah, but Mahomes threw a pick. Oh, my God, he threw a pick. We don't fully appreciate it because we're spoiled as Chiefs fans because the Chiefs have been good every year Andy Reid's been there. The first year Andy Reid took over, the Chiefs were 9-0. Okay? I mean, the Chiefs fans are spoiled with Andy Reid. Whereas the Royals, you're like, you laughed. Ah, we yoasted again. All of a sudden, we win. Woohoo! And we enjoy the ride. And we knew the ride was going to be short, didn't we? We knew the ride was going to be maybe just 14. The ride actually was 14 and 15. So we enjoyed that ride. More so, I think Royals fans enjoyed that ride more so than KU fans enjoy any ride they have and any ride the Chiefs have. Because the Royals, you in order to appreciate greatness, you have to understand losing. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, for sure.
In order to really appreciate greatness, you have to have an appreciation or understanding of how hard it is to win. And when you're a Chiefs fan, and if you're a younger person, you might only know the Andy Reid era. You have no idea the Chiefs were 2-14, had the number one overall pick in Eric Fisher. You have no idea. For a lot of people, that could be true.
Yeah.
Or you're a bandwagon fan, jumped on when Andy came on. Or you're a bandwagon fan and jumped on when Mahomes became the quarterback. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with jumping on the wagon. That's cool. All right, we got a lot of room on the wagon. All right, the axles can weigh down a little bit, but we'll put you on. That's fine. And we expect you to jump off because that's what happens when teams go bad again. See the Royals, as Dusty pointed out. But I think, for me, on all the teams I cheer for, you appreciate the Royals, and people enjoyed that ride and appreciated it more than the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl last year, than KU making the Final Four when they got by Duke, which I think a lot of KU fans actually were satisfied with making a Final Four that year a few years ago because they knew Kansas maybe wasn't that good to win it all, but they made a Final Four. Usually KU makes Final Four, it's like, we got to win it now. That was kind of a rare situation. And now the Chiefs. We're the Chiefs now. We're whining about how they're not winning by enough. And it's ridiculous. It's like, okay, would you rather be a team that wins 5 blowouts but then loses 4 close games? Does that make you feel better? Because I'm all about the letters as well. I'm not overly worried about Mahomes. Oh, no, Mahomes didn't get 5,000 passing yards because he sat out the last week. This whole argument about Aaron Rodgers being the MVP, because if the Packers win week 17, he should be the MVP. If that's your logic going into that game, then your logic's extremely flawed because Mahomes didn't have to play a 17th game to get the number one seed, and he's in the better conference. So if you want to make an MVP argument, and your argument is, well, Rodgers gets the advantage because he won the final game to get the one seed. Why do you punish Mahomes when he did it in less time to clinch the one seed?
Yeah.
And see, to me, if you argue Rodgers is the MVP, you should have already made up your mind before week 17 is my point.
Absolutely.
Now, the reason I tie that all together is we automatically, as Chiefs fans, say, well, Mahomes is the best quarterback. He should get MVP. But did you actually watch Josh Allen play this year as a Chiefs fan, other than when they played the Chiefs? Did you actually watch Aaron Rodgers play football this year? Or are you just going off what you read? Or is it just because you love Patrick Mahomes? So no matter what Mahomes does, you automatically think he's the greatest, so he should be MVP, even though you don't take the time to understand that there's other quarterbacks that are really good.
Yeah.
And that goes back to KU again. You don't understand that it's hard to win because you've always won. You don't understand that 8-2 is really good. Well, yeah, we're 8-2, but we had 5 really close wins. Yeah, but you won. Yeah, but we lost by 25 to Texas. But you're still 2-1 in the Big 12. You're not 0-3. It's really hard for people to grasp that concept, isn't it?
Without a doubt. Just the way it is.
K-State football. Look at them. They start out great. And then, we're going to go to the Big 12 title game. Next thing you know, they're sitting there going, we don't want to be in a bowl game.
Lost 5 games in a row. And it's like, yeah, let's just wrap it up.
So maybe you should enjoy that run when they were 4-0 instead of whining about the next game. Enjoy the win over Oklahoma. and you know, as much as you can, which K-State fans did.
And then,
you know, understand later on, OU is going to shove it back in your face when they're playing in a Cotton Bowl and you're not even have a winning record.
Yeah.
Well, we beat you. Yeah, but we're still playing. I mean, there's a fair argument each way there, right? So Oklahoma fans are extremely spoiled. There's another example.
Yeah.
Alabama, Clemson, all the top dogs, they have no idea, for the most part, what it's like to go backwards.
No. That's good. I mean,
they have no idea.
Oklahoma's won every Big 12 championship since the game was reinstated.
Right.
So, yeah, they're very spoiled. They don't take real well to losing. They don't take real well to losing that game against K-State at home, right?
No.
You talk about a group of fans that, was, you know, the sky was falling.
Yes.
Two losses in a row to start the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But then didn't lose again
right.
the rest of the year.
Yeah. Lincoln Riley
could have.
Lincoln Riley was catching some heat.
But again, it was a team that figured themselves out. And won the close games when they needed to, and then ended up with a Big 12 championship and a bowl game win, you know. Cotton Bowl win over the Florida.
So what I'm trying to say to people is winning isn't guaranteed. It's hard to win, man. I know Andy Reid makes it look easy. I know the Chiefs make it look easy, although, you know, some of these games have been kind of stressful at the end. You know, the KU makes it usually look easy. It's been kind of tough to win games this year. That gives you, to me, I have more appreciation for this team finding a way to win those close games than teams that are just simply more talented and win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I appreciate when Chris Klieman and K-State goes to Oklahoma and they're down by a ton and they don't give up and come back and win. I mean, that's a win that you should really appreciate and enjoy instead of already worried about the next opponent. Like, actually enjoy it. Now, coaches and players got to turn the page quickly, but as fans, you need to enjoy those seasons. You got to enjoy this year when you're undefeated and you go into Waco, and yeah, you lost to Baylor, but that doesn't mean you had a horrible year because you lost to Baylor. I mean, you got to enjoy that ride. You know, Nebraska fans would love to enjoy those rides again, wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
Because they took them for granted, trust me. They took 9-win seasons for granted. Texas takes 9-win seasons for granted in football. And you can easily be the other way. We could be 15 years from now and Bill Self's gone, retired, dead, gone to the NBA. And Kansas makes a bad hire on the next guy. And Kansas suddenly could be a team that, 7, 8, 9 seed, 6 seed, and they're not winning the Big 12. And Kansas fans will think that the world has absolutely come to an end. Because Kansas fans will not have any idea how to handle it.
No.
And honestly, the younger generation Chiefs fans are not going to be able to handle post-Mahomes. Because odds are the next guy you bring in Mahomes obviously isn't going to probably be as good as he is, and you're not going to go out and win your division every single year, and you're not going to go out and win 12, 13, 14 games every year.
Just go ahead and talk to the Patriots about that, right?
Ask the Patriots about how the Patriots, you know, Patriot fans probably took that for granted. Guess what? They're getting a big piece of humble pie this year. You know, Bronco fans had to deal with it. Well, we had Elway for all those years, and we had Peyton Manning, and now they're like, who the heck's our quarterback? Is Drew Locke the answer? Hey, welcome to Kansas City Chiefs Kingdom. That's the way it used to be for us. We didn't know we'd get some retread quarterback. We never even drafted a guy, and we'd still win some games, but we were never really seriously a contender. Now we're on the flip side. We got the marquee guy, and now we're spoiled, and now we've turned into the Bronco fans we despised. I mean, honestly, that's how it is.
Yeah.
And we just don't sometimes stop. What do they say? Stop to smell the roses, right? And we whine about everything in life, about what's going wrong, but we don't really focus on the positives. And I think that applies to sports. It applies to life. And so when you get all riled up about KU losing by 25 at home to Texas, remember, one, this is still just a game, and Lord knows we should understand it's just a game when we're in these COVID-19 situation, people have died and so forth and get sick. We should appreciate life even more, and we should also understand that it's just a game, and the fact that there are only 2,500 people at the stands and that place wasn't loud and rocking should tell you all you need to know that it's still just a game. So when you freak out losing by 25 and your team's still 8-2, there's a lot of teams outside of Kansas, a lot of fans going, boo-hoo-hoo, you spoiled rotten children. My team's 3-7. I'm a K-State fan, and we barely beat Omaha. And you're whining about 8-2? Someday you might be on the other side, and you ain't going to like it. Ask the Patriot fans right now how they like having a losing year. Or they go, well, they go 7-9, they go 8-8. Do they get 500 if the Patriots?
I think it was 7-9.
7-9, yeah. Ask them how great that feels. So just appreciate it, man. Appreciate as much as you can. Okay, K-State is playing at Texas Tech. Now, you might not want to appreciate 5-6. I get that. That's what K-State is. 1-2 in the Big 12. They're at Texas Tech tonight, and Texas Tech has some really talented transfers, including the McClung kid from Georgetown. Here's K-State going to Texas Tech, 6 o'clock tonight. Bill, Bruce Weber on Tech and their transfers.
Chris has done a good job. Even though this year I think we have really good freshmen in our league, they've been able to find those free agent transfers and piece them into their with some of their really talented young guys. You know, a couple of years ago he changed his defensive system and took some of Coach Knight's stuff, took some other guys. Scott Guru's kind of taken it and gone with it. They have the athletes and the depth to play that way. Got to give them credit. So it'll be a tough game.
All right, K-State tonight at Tech. Do you think K-State has a – I mean, do you think they're going to win?
I think
no. Most people say no.
No.
Yeah. but it won't be the hostile environment. Any of these road games won't be. So that actually helps the underdog, I think. I don't expect them to win tonight either, but I could see this being an ugly, lower-scoring game. And if it's a lower-scoring game, that means K-State's probably not getting run out of the building, which means they would have a chance. I mean, they show flashes, but they're young. We know that. They're inexperienced in those flashes. It's hard to win road games and conference play when you have that inconsistency. But let's be honest. K-State did go to Ames and win. I know I don't think Iowa State's nearly as good as Texas Tech, but that should be pointed out. As we said, Iowa State's at Texas tonight, and if Texas loses that game, you're going to sit here and go back and say, Texas, you know, they're nice story, but now they're going to go back to the way they were. Their Super Bowl was beating KU, and now they're satisfied. So the narrative for them could change very quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? You're only as good as your next game, right? Chiefs go 14-2, and they lose to the Ravens in the divisional round. It will be a failure of a season for a lot of Chiefs fans. Which is really sad when you're 14-2 and best season in franchise history. It's pretty sad when you're considered a failure. You only go 73-9 like the Warriors, and you're up 3-1 in the finals and lose the finals to LeBron James, who may be the greatest of all time. And Warrior fans say, we don't want to hear that. We were 73-9. It's a failure. We didn't win the championship. Kansas, 1987, is 34-1. They're a failure because they didn't win against Arizona, who had four pros in their starting lineup. One came off the bench and Jason Terry, who was a longtime pro. Their guards were all pros. But Kansas was supposed to win that game because they had a lot of pros too.
Yeah.
But they were missing one player in that game. And that was Jared Haas. So, but that was a wasted season. I have fond memories of that season. I don't think it's a wasted season. If I still have memories of that, to me that's not a waste. Is it a waste that the Royals in 2014 weren't expected to make it to the World Series. Did people say it was a wasted season, Royals lost in Game 7 to the Giants? No.
No.
But had the Royals won 116 games, like the Mariners did one year, and then lost in Game 7, it's failure. Isn't that, how messed up is our society when we consider those things, right? Kevin Durant will need to quarantine for 7 days. I'll have you go the next 2 years and grab that. Kevin Durant will need to quarantine for 7 days after the NBA's contact tracing initiative revealed that he has been exposed to COVID-19. Durant already had COVID-19 early in the outbreak. He has tested negative and still has antibodies, according to ESPN, but the league's rules do not distinguish between players that have had COVID and those that have not. Kind of interesting nugget there. You probably saw Casey Jones, NBA, NCAA Hall of Fame basketball player. He died recently, back in December. Well, there's a connection between Casey Jones and Beloit High School. And his picture with several Olympic teammates hangs on the wall at the Beloit High School trophy case. This coming from Jay Rao. Casey Jones was a member of the San Francisco Dons National Basketball Championship team of 1956. He and Bill Russell, another San Francisco player and later Boston Celtic teammate, were members of that Olympic team. In those days, the Amateur Athletic Union held a tryout to determine the Olympic team. One of the Industrial Basketball League players was Bill Hoagland, a graduate of Beloit High School, who went on to play at KU and was part of the KU 1952 National Championship team in basketball. As such, he participated in the 52 Olympic basketball trials and made the team. The USA went on to win the 1952 gold medal in basketball at the Helsinki Olympic Games. After graduating from KU, Hoagland then went to work for Phillips Petroleum in Oklahoma. He played for the Phillips 66ers IBL basketball team. When the trials were held for the 1956 games, which were held in Australia, Hoagland participated and was again selected to be on the Olympic basketball team. In fact, Bill Hoagland was the only holdover from the 52 squad that won the Olympic gold then and was honored by being chosen the captain of the 56 team. They also won the gold medal in the 56 Olympics. As such, Bill Hoagland from Beloit, Kansas, was the only person in the world to win two gold medals in Olympic basketball, a distinction he held until the dream team of Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, and others won a gold medal in 1992 at Barcelona. And that, of course, is once they allowed professional players instead of just amateurs. So there is a picture in the Beloit High School trophy case of that 1956 gold medal basketball team featuring Bill Russell, NBA, NCAA Hall of Famer, Casey Jones, who just passed away. He was a great coach as well, won championships as a coach for the Celtics, and a great defensive player for the Celtics, helping them win championships, and Beloit's own Bill Hoagland, the captain of that team. Isn't that pretty crazy? Remarkable accomplishment for one of Beloit's great graduates. Yeah, Bill Hoagland. There's a picture of him with Bill Russell and Casey Jones, the 56 gold medal basketball team, and it wasn't Jones or Russell that was the captain of that team. It was a guy from Beloit, Kansas. Thanks to Lawrence Tripp for that information, and that came from Lawrence through Jay to us. Really good stuff. Really cool. Chiefs update on injuries. Matthew Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com. We have Matthew on many times before on the show. He says that Andy Reid says surgery went well for cornerback DeAndre Baker on his fractured femur. Can do a little weight bearing on it. He says it was a clean break. Prognosis is good. They look forward to getting him back next season. So that's good because they might need that Baker as a corner next year on this team. You don't know if Breland will be back next year and everything else in regards to turnover from one season to another. Willie Gay has a high sprain on his ankle. He is out. They say recovery time 2 to 4 weeks, so he maybe could be back for the divisional round against either the Ravens, the Titans, the Browns, or the Colts. That's the four options for the Chiefs next Saturday or Sunday at Arrowhead as the Chiefs get this week off due to a bye. So that's the injury update there. I would be more interested in, is Mitchell Schwartz going to come back for the playoffs and play at right tackle or not? I'm not holding my breath on that one. I think he's probably done for the year, but we shall see there. That would help if he's healthy, but I don't think he is. A back injury can linger for a long time. I think you really got to sit here and go, is Mitchell Schwartz going to be ready to go next year? Or will he have continuous flare-ups of the back issue? And then did the Chiefs have a problem at right tackle protecting, you know, the right side for Patrick Mahomes? That's an interesting nugget there. The Chiefs know who they're going to play next year. Obviously, they play the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Raiders twice. The Chiefs will have home games next year against the Steelers, the Browns, the Bills, the Dallas Cowboys, and the New York Giants. They will have road games at the Ravens, at the Bengals, at the Washington football team. Hey, Mahomes versus Alex Smith next year, possibly. At the Eagles, Andy Reid against Doug Peterson, maybe, if Peterson keeps his job with the Eagles. And the Chiefs would also be at the Tennessee Titans next year. So once again, the Chiefs road games, Broncos, Chargers, Raiders, Ravens, Bengals, Washington football team, Eagles, Titans next year. Chiefs home games next year, Broncos, Raiders, Chargers, Steelers, Browns, Bills, Cowboys, Giants. Don't know exactly who, when, what week they play who, but we do know that's the those are the opponents, the 16 opponents next year for the Chiefs. If they do, in fact, add a 17th game, which there's talk that they've already agreed to this, although not, I don't know if that's been concrete yet. If there is a 17th game and they shorten the preseason, then it sounds like the Chiefs would play the Packers for a 17th game. Aaron Rodgers versus Patrick Mahomes, sign me up for that one. Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, is highly sought out. You know, he didn't get a lot of offers last year, which is really interesting because a lot of people thought he was ready to be a head coach last year, but he's a hot commodity this year. You know, it helps to have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. Your offense is going to score pretty well. You're going to have nice stats as offensive coordinator. You have Andy Reid helping you call plays. I'm not saying that to belittle Eric Bieniemy because I think he could be a really good head coach. And I think Andy Reid's track record and coaching tree proves that Andy Reid helps coaches get prepared to be head coaches. So I think Eric Bieniemy could be a really good head coach. I'm not convinced Eric Bieniemy is a genius because, you know, I think just like Steve Sarkisian looks like a genius because he has all this talent at Alabama. I mean, I think coaches need to get credit for utilizing their talent. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sold Eric Bieniemy is going to be a guy that goes out and wins a Super Bowl as a head coach. Although I might say that he might be, I think, better than Doug Peterson, and Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. But the Chargers are now asking for permission to interview Eric Bieniemy. Yesterday, we brought this very possibility up on this show before Anthony Lynn was fired. He was fired after we signed off on this show yesterday on the Sports Ticket. And we said, do you think there'd be some kind of like agreement between Andy Reid and Bieniemy saying, listen, man, I want you to be a head coach anywhere but in our division. And we talked about yesterday how the Chargers would be crazy not to talk to the Chiefs, one, to maybe get info on one of their rivals in the division, two, to find out if there's any chinks in the armor of Mahomes, and three, get a pretty good offensive coordinator that could be a really good head coach. The Chargers are interested. Also, sounds like Bieniemy is going to interview or has interviewed with the Atlanta Falcons, and Jacksonville has shown interest as well. So Eric Bieniemy more than likely will not be with the Chiefs next year. And then the next question would be, who would step into the offensive coordinator role for the Chiefs? Some people would say Mike Kafka. Well, Mike Kafka is a quarterback's coach, and some teams are looking at him possibly being a head coaching candidate already. The Chiefs got a couple guys in front office that are being interviewed for GM jobs. This is the price of success. When you win a lot, like the Chiefs have the last few years, and then you win a Super Bowl, and you're 14-2 this year, people want to poach the teams that do well because they know they got guys that are pretty smart, whether they're riding the coattails of Andy Reid or whether they're really pulling their weight. These guys are going to get a look before a guy that might be really brilliant that's part of a 7-9 organization this year. So here are the openings in the NFL. Jacksonville, the Chargers, the Jets, the Texans, the Lions, and the Falcons. So CBSSports.com did a story, and they posted the most appealing jobs, and they rated the six openings in the National Football League for head coaches. They rate the Falcons as the worst of the six jobs, the Lions second worst, the Texans third worst, and then they think the Jets is the third best job available because the Jets do have quite a few draft picks. You could draft your franchise quarterback with a second overall pick, or you might go ahead and if you're sold on Sam Darnold, you stick with him. The Chargers are number two on the list. You have Justin Herbert, who, you know, unbelievable rookie year. You do have the 13th pick in the draft. Your defense is really good. You've got stars like Joey Bosa, Keenan Allen on offense. You got Kenneth Murray, a young guy, the guy at Oklahoma at linebacker. I mean, the Chargers got some tools, some players, some talent. You'd be in a warm climate, if that matters, where you want to live. You're in a big media market, if that matters to you as well. So the Chargers looks very appealing. And then there's Jacksonville, which they rank as the best job that's out there, which you may say that sounds silly. The Jacksonville Jaguars were 1-15. They got a long way to go. Listen, the Chiefs went from 2-14 to 9-0. Andy Reid was that good, and they made changes during the offseason. You can the St. Louis Rams at the time, they were what, 4-12, and next year they won the Super Bowl. You can go from being bad record-wise to being in the playoffs the next year or maybe even making a run to the playoffs or the Super Bowl. It can be done. Jacksonville's got the number one overall pick. So if Eric Bieniemy went to Jacksonville, he could help decide what quarterback. Do we want Lawrence? Do we want Fields? Do we trade out of the pick? The Jaguars have various second-round picks as well. And the other thing that, to me, would be appealing, if you're going to compare Jacksonville to the Chargers' jobs, the Chargers, there's, I think, more pressure to be better sooner, because you do have that talent I referred to, and they lost so many close games this year. So you could argue that the Chargers, there's more pressure to win a little quicker, but you could also counter that argument and say, yeah, but they lost a ton of one-possession games. They're not that far away from being 12-4 instead of 7-9. That'd be a valid point. Jacksonville, you go to a warm weather climate. There is not much pressure in Jacksonville to be good right away. You draft the quarterback you want with the number one overall pick. If Eric Bieniemy is really good at working with quarterbacks, which he did, he was good with Mahomes, but, you know, is that just because of Mahomes? Is that because of Bieniemy? Combination of the two? Don't know. Bieniemy then could work from scratch with a quarterback of his choosing, perhaps, in Jacksonville. And here's another reason why Jacksonville would be more appealing than L.A. You wouldn't be in the same division as the Chiefs. In fact, you'd be in a warm weather climate, and you'd be in a division with the Colts, who have an old quarterback in Phillip Rivers and don't have an heir apparent ready to go. You'd be in the same division as the Houston Texans, who are a mess as an organization right now. And you'd be in the same division as the Titans. And do you think Derrick Henry's going to play for the next 3-4 years with all the punishment he's taken? You know, they're Derrick Henry injury away from not being nearly as good. And they got Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback, who's a good quarterback. Don't get me wrong. He's improved. But Tennessee doesn't, like, scare you. Their defense isn't that great. So if I'm Eric Bieniemy and I'm looking at the jobs, and I saw some people say, well, the Charger job, that's the one that he should take. And I think he could go – I don't think he could go wrong with either job. But if you want to turn things around and there's not as much pressure to turn around right away, and you want to be in a division where you have a better chance of winning the division – and maybe you don't want to be in the same division as your mentor, Andy Reid. Jacksonville's the spot. Jacksonville's the spot. Now, if Eric Bieniemy goes, listen, I like Justin Herbert. He's a proven commodity in 1 year. I know the Chargers well. We've game planned for him twice. I think they're going to be loaded. I think that the Chiefs are going to have some problems the next couple of years. I'm not afraid of going up against my mentor, Andy Reid. I'm not afraid of going up against Patrick Mahomes. And I think the Chargers, I can lead them to be the king of the AFC West. Then by all means, Eric Bieniemy, he should take that job if it's offered to him. I think the Texans, if the organization was more organized, I think Deshaun Watson's a great guy to build around. He's still extremely young. And I put the Texans' job ahead of the Jets' job, in my opinion, because there's tons of pressure in New York, as we know. So I would rank these jobs as Jacksonville 1, the Chargers 2, and then I put Houston ahead of the Jets' job. That's how I'd rank them. The Lions, you have an older quarterback in Stafford. You've got the Falcons' older quarterback, Ryan, who has a big money, a cap hit. That hurts you. You can't just cut him. It's a huge cap hit. So the Falcons aren't in good situation financially in the salary cap. The Lions have Matthew Stafford, who, you know, can you win for a few years with him? Maybe. Detroit, cold weather city. You know, if you care about where you live, that's got to be part of the factor. Also, how much money these guys are going to offer you if you're the head coaching candidate that they want. But I think for Airbnb, if I'm him, I'm choosing between, and what a horrible decision. I could go to Florida or L.A. Beaches everywhere. Ocean nearby. Jacksonville or L.A., I could argue on either side that would be the best job for Eric Bieniemy. I think he might be intrigued by Deshaun Watson working with him with the Houston Texans as well. But Jacksonville and the Chargers, you'd have more time and I think less pressure in Jacksonville, and you could groom the guy that you pick with the number one pick in the draft, and you have other draft picks to build your team, and you got an undrafted rookie that ran for over 1,000 yards. You get some talent there. Receivers are talented. Jacksonville, you get that quarterback. If Trevor Lawrence is the guy, many people think he's the best quarterback to come out, most polished quarterback, passing quarterback since Andrew Luck. If you believe Trevor Lawrence could be the next Andrew Luck, then you draft him and you build your team around him, and Jacksonville's got some pieces. If you don't want to go with an unproven commodity, a college kid like Trevor Lawrence, you want to go with Justin Herbert, who is very young as well, who's had 1 year in the NFL and did great, then perhaps the Chargers is your choice, but then you have to deal with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid twice every year. So those are the choices right now. That doesn't mean Eric Bieniemy is going to get his choice of any of these jobs. He might only get offered one, and he's going to have to take the one he's offered. Or he's going to say, you know what, that's not the job I want. I'm happy here in Kansas City. I'll spurn these offers. I'll wait until the job I really want pops up next year. And that's something people have left out of this equation discussion of Eric Bieniemy going somewhere else. What if Eric Bieniemy has a list of a few teams he's really interested in being the head coach of, or he knows or has information that says, you know what, there's a job next year that a coach has that probably is going to be on the hot seat. Maybe I'll wait for that job to open. Eric Bieniemy does not have to go get a job right now. If he doesn't take a job, the Chiefs will welcome him back as your OC, and he'll work with Mahomes again. And it won't hurt the resume at all. So, to me, it's pretty simple. Number one, Jacksonville. Number two, Chargers. Number three, Texans. That'd be the order I'd have. And I know the Texans don't have a lot of draft picks. Listen, you've got Deshaun Watson. Which would you rather build around? Sam Darnold or Deshaun Watson? That's easy. So that's why I put the Texans' job ahead of the Jets. And the pressure in Houston isn't nearly as high as in New York. That's a fact. And then the Lions and the Falcons, I don't even consider those jobs unless you're... If you had the number one pick with Atlanta, you got your quarterback, and you got Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones, now that'd be a different situation. But you got Matt Ryan, who has a dead cap hit of nearly $50 million next year, so he's almost impossible to trade. They do have a number four overall pick. So perhaps if there's a quarterback, you wouldn't get Lawrence and probably not Justin Fields. Or maybe Justin Fields would fall in your lap in Atlanta. Maybe Atlanta is a sleeper for Eric Bieniemy to go be the head coach of. Maybe I'm discounting that. Or maybe all six of these teams are going to interview Eric Bieniemy and say, you know what, you got a little bit of baggage from back in your history, earlier in your life, and Eric Bieniemy does. And perhaps these coaches or these organizations are going to interview Eric Bieniemy like a few did last year, and they're all going to say, you know what, I'm not feeling comfortable with Bieniemy, and Bieniemy won't even get a job offer. A lot of people just automatically think Bieniemy is going to be a head coach this year. We assume that. But if he doesn't get an offer from anybody, because, by the way, they do interview other people besides one person for the jobs at these major millionaire organizations. I mean, these are businesses. So you make the wrong hire, it can really mess up your organization. Now, if you're Jacksonville, you're 1-15, or you're Houston, you already kind of gone south anyway. Or the right hire can really change everything for quite some time, for maybe the next decade. So it's important to get the hires right if you want to turn things around. And I think the Jaguars and the Chargers are definitely the two most appealing spots of the six for Eric Bieniemy. But what do I know? I'm not being interviewed, and I'm not offered a lot of money. Maybe it comes down to, hey, I'm going to go to Detroit because they're going to give me $1 million more per year than everybody else, and you all live with Matt Stafford until we're bad enough to get a high draft pick to get a quarterback. I don't know. Or maybe Eric Bieniemy doesn't want to be a head coach as badly as some people think. Who knows? You'd have to ask him that. That's the ticket today. Have a great day, everyone. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. KU tonight at TCU, 8:30 this evening. Tip off at 9 on Z96.3 Lake. If you can't hear it because of low power on our transmitter site, get the app and you can listen streaming on your app or mobile device. The app is free, the Z96.3 Lake app, and also don't forget the free KD Country 94 app as well.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.